Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report with your host, Brittany Broski.
What do you mean you've never seen Blade Runner? Guys, hello and welcome. Bienvenue. Okay, welcome back to another dissective episode of The Broski Report, starring me, your host, Brittany Broski, a sort of Aristotle of sorts. Plato. Ever heard of him? Plato would have loved The Broski Report. Plato, big fan of The Broski Report. R.I.P. Plato, you would have fucking loved The Broski Report. Guys, I come to you today in a contemplative and inquisitive mood. I feel the need to impress upon you, it is 9:29 p.m. upon the date and time of recording said episode. I am two Red Bulls deep, okay? I feel like I'm in college again. Sometimes when I would pull an all-nighter, I would body, absolutely neck and slurp on a blueberry Red Bull around this time of night, 9:10 p.m. I'd have some Takis and I would have some something sweet, okay? That would sort of be the Rolodex of snacks to keep me awake on a bender. Now, a bender of an academic nature, of course. I feel like Renfield from Dracula. This is not the first time I've mentioned Renfield on this podcast, okay? Don't remember what episode? Loyal Broski Nation Army members, go find what episode that was where I talked about Renfield syndrome, Renfield disease, where it's a condition that's been reported in humans where people eat and drink blood. Okay, now, I come to you today, inquisitive and contemplative in nature, about technology. Okay? The great question, is it good? Is it bad? Is it moral? Is it evil? Is it, which is my opinion, a neutral device, like anything, arguably, that is man-made, that man then adds an emotional connotation to? It is a device that can be used for good or evil, okay? I just watched Blade Runner.
What do you mean you've never seen Blade Runner?
That's an Arctic Monkeys song. Who is it?
Tranquility Base, Hotel and Casino, Mark speaking. Please tell me how may I direct your call.
Okay. Alex, I can't talk right now. Alex Turner, Arctic Monkeys, Alex Turner. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I've been good. No, yeah, I can't talk right now. I'm doing the pod. Yes. Yes. Yeah, Crunchwrap. Yeah, Crunchwrap. No sour cream. You know, I don't like it. Okay. All right, I'll see you soon. Okay, bye. Sorry, I'm hanging out with Alex Turner later. He wanted my Taco Bell order. Okay, the song, and I think it is the title track from this album. This album goes fucking crazy, by the way. Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino is the sixth studio album by English rock band Arctic Monkeys, released on May 11th, 2018, one day after my birthday. Okay, what is the song? Arctic Monkeys.
What do you mean you've never seen Blade Runner?
Star Treatment. Okay, what the fuck was I talking about? I just watched Blade Runner for the first time in my life. Yeah, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it, dude. My knowledge and sort of cultural understanding of movies is relatively limited when it comes to that sector of pop culture, okay? I'm much more of a music person. I'm much more of a music person. I'm much more of a meme connoisseur, okay? Digital art versus cinema, okay? Blade Runner, I'll be honest, didn't know Harrison Ford was in it. That was kind of a shock to me, okay? Oh, Han Solo's in it! Oh, they got Han Solo being Blade Runner! That was literally me, okay? I took paper notes like a poet of old, okay? Like a poet of old. I'll say it again. Plato, Aristotle, we would have had a time. Plato and Aristotle, Eiffel Tower. Sorry. Sorry. Stupid. Dumb. You can catch me in Paris. You can catch me in France. And it's Aristotle and Plato. You know those TikTok edits where it's people saying who they'd like to have a threesome with? All right. Anyway. Okay. Let me just go ahead and flip through these. Like I said, I took paper notes because, also if you think that these are actually going to be notes of like commentary on the movie or, you know, maybe deeper meanings or symbolic takeaways or understandings that I got from the movie, you are sadly mistaken. These are just thought starters for me to sort of word diarrhea into this microphone. And thank God there's a pop filter on this microphone because you know it smells crazy. Okay. First question. Not really a question. I need Roy. Okay. Let me go ahead and show you Roy from Blade Runner. Let's see. Roy from Blade Runner. Yeah. Okay. Now, at first when they showed him, I thought this was the fucking guy who plays Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins. Thought this was Anthony Hopkins, and goddamn it, it might be. Who plays Roy Batty? Rutger Hauer. Oh my God, he died. And I was just about to send him a DM. Actor Rutger Hauer. Okay, right. So that is not going to be Anthony Hopkins. Let's pull up a side-by-side. That is crazy. Look at that. They look, I mean, you could, in all fairness, pull up a whole roster of just old white men, and I'd be like, oh, they were brothers. Anyway, this guy, yeah, he had me feeling some things in the nether when I was watching Blade Runner, okay? Blade Runner goes crazy. Now, it is one of those sort of cheesy, original sci-fi movies that is so, I mean, just iconic in its aesthetic and its storyline and its whatever. Did I find it a little hard to watch at times? Yes, because I am accustomed to the sci-fi of the new age, okay? Dune is gonna wipe everything off the fucking map. I haven't even spoken. I have not addressed the nation about Dune 2, okay? I have not spoken. We will get to that. Don't rush me. I have a lot to cover today in the sci-fi front, okay? Space, the final frontier. Now, this guy, Roy, scared me at first. Then, as the movie progresses, very hot, need him very bad. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and check that off the checklist. Second thing I wrote, if I lived in Blade Runner, what would I genetically modify? Because here is the plot of Blade Runner if you've never seen it.
What do you mean you've never seen Blade Runner?
I think Alex Turner needs to be put in a museum and studied. Why does he act like that? So the plot of Blade Runner is essentially we created humanoids, okay? And they resembled humans so much that it became incredibly hard to differentiate. And the difference is they're called replicants, these humanoid-type figures. They have a four-year lifespan, and that's how you tell the difference is obviously, you know, they die way quicker. But also, they became rebellious in nature, like any good sci-fi movie is. But what I don't appreciate is that a lot of Blade Runner was about, you know, it tells you the lore. And then it just kind of gets in. It's a chase movie. Oh, they're chasing. They got to kill each other. Oh, they chase. Oh, okay. You know, and then they run away. Like, that's kind of the premise of the movie. Oh, they're just running through the rainy streets of sci-fi Chinatown in Los Angeles in 2019, quote unquote. Okay? I do actually think it's very interesting to think about this movie came out in 1982. And when I talk about this sort of shit, hold on. My mind's going at about 7,000 kilometers per second. Okay, my mind's going at light speed. My mouth's going at speed, okay? I find it incredibly interesting to think about 40 years ago, 1982 is when Blade Runner came out. They filmed it before then. The concept was even more previous than that. What they imagined 2019 to be like, and it is truly, truly the future of the Jetsons. And my God, we could not be farther away, okay? As society and technology, as technology progresses, society regresses. And it's an interesting parallel that's moving in opposite directions, right? Very, very interesting. And I think that it's fun to explore that when it comes to retrofuturism. Things like the Jetsons, things like Blade Runner, things like, I mean, even you could argue Star Wars, where this is what I imagine, even though Star Wars was, you know, thousands of years ago in a galaxy far, far away, when you imagine this is what the future of tech will bring, and all it's given us is fucking brain rot and TikTok ASMR. Was it worth it? Okay? We've got Teslas exploding. Was it worth it? Now, beyond that, the replicants obviously are these humanoid type figures that have come back to Earth to, their goal is to kill. Like any goal is to kill. And they want to kill their master, right? And so the creature destroys the creator. I love this trope. I love this trope in media. The creature kills the creator. Okay? And I did go ahead and write something down here. This is a quote from the creator of the replicants. The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long. Damn. Okay, what does that mean outside the context of Blade Runner? Couldn't tell you. Sounds cool, though. The light that burns twice as bright shines for half as long. I don't know if that's true, because some people's lights burn brighter than others, but that doesn't mean that our inherent light is devalued or less than anyone else's, okay? Brightness is just a measure. Brightness is just a measure of, I don't know if you would say greatness, but maybe of reachability, of attention grabbing, because we're just monkeys at the end of the day, okay? We're just creatures that when we see a shiny thing, we play with it, and when we see a shinier thing, we're going to go play with that, okay? It's monkey brain, lizard brain, crow brain, raven brain. What is the difference between crow brain and monkey brain? Okay, I did not mean it in a literal sense. Crows and monkeys have similar cognitive capacities, with both species having a working memory capacity of about 4 items. Me too. Crows and monkeys also share the same central mechanisms and limits of working memory, despite their different brain architectures. So they're actually incredibly similar. What am I thinking of? Lizard brain? Crow brain versus lizard brain. Reptiles are the real bird brains. Yeah, that's what I've always said that. You can watch any episode. I've brought it up any episode. I've always said that reptiles are the real bird brains. Mammals and birds have dramatically more neurons in their forebrain. What the fuck is a forebrain? Where is my forebrain? Do I have a forebrain? In the anatomy of the brain of vertebrates, the forebrain, or prosencephalon, is the rostral portion of the brain. Jarvis, can we go ahead and pull up a map of the brain? Map of the brain, enhance, temporal lobe, occipital, parietal, frontal, cerebellum. Right, so the cerebellum sits opposite of the forebrain. I've never heard it referred to as the forebrain in a human. I find that very funny. Okay, moving on. What parts of the brain control what? Now we're down a fucking rabbit hole. Bear with me. I'll get out of this in a second. The frontal lobe, all right, the forebrain, the foreskin of the brain. And I do wonder, because Noel talked about this on the TMG podcast, if the human brain is actually the consistency of whipped butter, warm whipped butter, what would it taste like? If it were to be, I don't know, salted, seasoned with a little lemon pepper, and smeared on a piece of toast. The frontal lobe, the brain foreskin, is for personality and emotions, higher thinking skills like problem solving and controlling movement. The temporal lobe, sitting right under that, sort of like the taint ball sack of the frontal lobe, helps process your hearing and other senses and helps with language and reading. So the ball sack helps you read. The parietal lobe, that's going to be the sort of crown, okay? The crown tip of the forebrain penis. Lost my place. Now see, there also is a pineal gland in the brain. This all makes sense if you really sit down to think about it. The parietal lobe is involved with your senses, attention, and language. The occipital lobe helps your eyes see, including recognition of shapes and colors. Let's see, occipital lobe, that's the back, that's the butthole of the brain. No, actually, the brainstem is the butthole of the brain, sort of the long intestine of the brain, if you will. All right, where is my forebrain? This episode is sponsored by Factor. I am plagued by the constant struggle of either not eating enough during the day or sometimes cooking and eating too much because my eyes are bigger than my stomach. The solution? Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love. Looking for gourmet? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, guys. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/broski50 and use code broski50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code broski50 at factormeals.com/broski50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. This episode is sponsored by ZocDoc. We all know there are things in life you have to compromise on, like maybe it's a nice apartment, but your neighbor is learning how to play the drums. When it comes to your health, there is no compromise, so don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on their latest family drama, okay? Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises are made because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doctor you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on the phone with a receptionist. And all these docs have verified reviews from actual, real patients. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, who are around you, or treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between 24 and 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. I found my dermatologist on ZocDoc, and Lord knows I put him to work. So go to ZocDoc.com/broski and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/broski. ZocDoc.com/broski. Where is forebrain? Has anyone seen my forebrain? That's a 1975 song, actually, by the way. The Ballad of Me and My Brain. My brain was last seen going for a run. And can you sign an autograph for my daughter, Laura? Cause she adores ya. I think you're shit. I've gotta look for my brain for a bit. Okay, moving on. What did I say? The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long. That is so fucking true. Where did they film Blade Runner? Let's go ahead and look that up. Where did they film Blade Runner? Not the shitty Ryan Gosling one. Didn't see it. Oh, no fucking way. They filmed it at Bradbury Building. The 1980... Oh my God, wait. I'm so excited. Sometimes I forget I live in Los Angeles. The 1982 film Blade Runner was filmed at Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank, California, including on stages 24, 25, and 4. The film's exterior sets were located on the lots, New York Street, and the interior scenes that took place at other locations, including... Interior scenes took place at other locations, including the Bradbury Building, which is so haunted. The Pan Am Building, which, oh my God, it was so weird watching... Blade Runner, which obviously is from the 80s, with shit like Atari and Pan Am, where it's like these iconic companies that kind of don't, you know, like they did not make it into the 21st century sort of thing. Very, very strange. Innis House. Oh my God, I literally am the smartest person alive. I was watching it and I was sitting on the couch and I was like, what an interesting interior that they chose for... what's his fucking name? Derek? Let's see it. Deckard. Agent Deckard, Officer Deckard. What an interesting interior they chose for his apartment. And I said, it's quite peculiar because it looks just like the Aztec sort of inspired style of that haunted house in Los Feliz. Okay. And that's, I literally thought that because my mom showed it to me because it's haunted. Okay. And that's, it's some famous, or I don't know if it's haunted, but it's very large, very iconic. And it was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. That's why it's very famous. And it sits on the top of this hill and it has a very specific pattern that is, it's very Aztec in nature. And it's interesting to see that in a sort of Western based, you know what the fuck I'm trying to say, Western futuristic movie, okay? And I remember sitting there and I was like, that looks like that house. Oh my God, it's because they fucking filmed it there. I am so smart. Second Street Tunnel, Million Dollar Theater. Now, I did recognize that. And then Union Station. Wow. Other filming locations include the Peterson Automotive Museum, which has props and vehicles from the film. That's cool. And Disney MGM Studios, which has a spinner on display. Now, that is cool. The Bradbury Building. The Bradbury Building was built by a dying man and designed by a draftsman consulting his dead brother. Hey, what? Hey, what? Located in downtown LA, only a few blocks from Angel's Flight, this five-story office building was completed in 1893. It was the dream of a gold mining millionaire named Louis Leonard Bradbury. He made a vast fortune with silver and gold mines down in Sinaloa, Mexico. In 1892, Bradbury was old and aging and wanted a building to be a monument to himself. Thus, he commissioned the building. Okay, so it's not haunted. Okay, so I lied. It's not haunted. Or maybe it is. Don't know. But that's an iconic building in LA. And it's, okay, go back. So they filmed all over the place. It's so weird going back and watching movies like that because you can tour the Warner Brothers set and you can see how they like gut, it's street views, you know, and they'll gut it and they'll change the exteriors and the names of the whatever. And it's like, once you start looking for it in certain movies, you can't ignore it. So when I started it and it said Warner Brothers, I was like, damn, I wonder if they're going to use any of the, like, if I'll recognize it. And I did. So. Yeah, you can say I'm a film buff. Check that off. Now, let's get into sort of what I've been wanting to talk about. This film explores the timeless question of mortality, right? The creator's creation craves more time. The creator understands how precious and limited time is, therefore making life more valuable, right? If the lifespan of these creatures is 4 years, that makes it more valuable. And that's always this question that we come back to on this podcast for some fucking reason of immortality not being a desirable concept. Because immortality is miserable. Because what makes life worth living is the fact that it is finite. It runs out. You must make the most of your life while you are alive. Because if you do not, that is a disservice to the universe. It is a disservice to yourself. And it's a disservice to everything life has to offer. Okay? Now, I love exploring this topic, and I've never explored it in the context of a futuristic sort of thing. It's always been this, like, fantasy, you know, like in Akatar, they're all immortal sort of thing. And it's like falling in love with a human, but you're going to die because you're a human. Twilight, I can't fall in love with a human because I'm going to outlive you and whatever. Okay. Something similar happens in Blade Runner, which I wanted to Google, by the way, because the ending, what the fuck is the ending of Blade Runner? Shit sucks. Shit blows. He falls in love with his robot girlfriend, his robot humanoid rebellion girlfriend, because she's being hunted because she's one of the, like, too far advanced, what are they called? Reluctance? What did I say? My brain's short circuiting. Replicant. She's one of the too far gone replicants, but he falls in love with her. Okay. He falls in love with her because I guess they make out one time and they have sex one time. And he's like, I think I need this robot for the rest of my life. Original fleshlight. Okay. We're talking about mod beta version fleshlight AI girlfriend Blade Runner. Okay. Harrison Ford was working with an operative beta model of AI girlfriend ASMR. But in real life, that's sort of the plot of Blade Runner. If you've never seen it, you don't have to. I just explained it for you. In the end, he like goes off and kills all the, no. And he's going to kill the last guy. I'm ruining the plot. If you've never seen it, it's been out for 40 fucking years. Sorry. He's going to kill the last guy and he's slipping off the building and he's like, no, I'm going to die and the robot's going to win. The robot reaches out, grabs him and with his like superhuman humanoid strength, pulls him up. And saves his life and puts him back on the roof. And then he sits there and it's the end of his 4-year life cycle. And so he dies. So this last act done by this humanoid being was an act of kindness and arguably peace between them. Because the replicant knew coming back to Earth, because this is a situation in science fiction dystopia where if you are able-bodied and of enough wealth and affluence, you are able to go off-world. They advertise it throughout the whole movie. If you are, if you can afford it and if you're willing and able, you can go off-world to a better future, okay? If you are not so fortunate, you're stuck, okay? You're stuck on Earth. So the question was, these replicants are coming back to Earth to kill their maker because they've been subjected to slavery on these off-world planets or off-world colonies. So coming back, I understand the mission and Harrison Ford's character is set to, you know, kill these replicants. The final exchange between these two characters is an act of selfless kindness. He could have let the human die. He didn't. And as he's dying, he releases a white dove, which I imagine, you know, represents peace and innocence and, you know, grapevine, all that sort of shit. And so Harrison Ford's character is left there to be like, why would bro do that? Why would bro show me kindness when I've been hunting him for, you know, whatever? So my question is, why does Roy save him in the end? Because I have my theory. And I think that that's to show humans that we just get it wrong. We think that we can play God. What happens when we play God? We are consistently and always humbled. It is the evergreen story of Icarus that we are doomed to repeat time and time again. We cannot play God. Not with technology, not with nature, not with war, not with sustenance. We are doomed to repeat the failures of our past. Why does Roy save Deckard? Because he wants to redeem himself before passing away. So it's a selfish, it's a selfish sacrifice. And because he knows his life will be meaningless if no one remembers it. Okay, is this an AI answer? Where's this from? Source! Oh, it's from fucking Quora. Okay, Roy, a combat unit designed to kill, saves Deckard as his final act, demonstrating that he has free will and is a fully human being. Extremely loud, incorrect buzzer. Because there's two sides of that coin. To be aggressively human, whether you're an optimist or a nihilist or a pessimist, whatever, to be human in nature, one could say it's to have empathy. Okay? That is the definable characteristic that separates us from other animals. We have empathy. We can ascend beyond the need to survive. We have cognitive abilities that are abstract, you know, and yes, that exists in other animals, but it is a uniquely human quality to have empathy. I don't think that a robot exhibiting empathy is something to be typed about here, because if we're talking about AI and technology learning from humans, it's just mimicking and mirroring human behavior. It doesn't mean it's innately, if nature versus nurture, if you left a robot in a fucking room by itself versus if you left a robot in a room with a human and it was able to mimic and mirror and watch how people interact with each other, would that robot be capable of developing empathy on its own? to be determined. Okay? That's why I don't agree with this. Roy, a combat unit designed to kill, saves Deckard as his final act, demonstrating that he has free will and is a fully human being. Yeah. Roy has lived like a slave his entire life, and he wants to experience the freedom strictly reserved for normal humans. Okay, understandable. When he realizes that his death is inevitable, he grabs Deckard by his arm and pulls him up, shocking Harrison Ford's character. Roy's epiphany is one of non-dualism, that there is a oneness that connects all life. Since Roy experienced this transcendent awakening, he doesn't see Deckard as separate from himself, and he saves Deckard's life instead of ending it. Seeing Deckard so helpless, Roy finally gets to feel like the master instead of the slave. He demonstrates that he has free will, that he is a fully human being, and thus the enormity of Tyrell's crime against him and the other replicants.
Makes you think. Really makes you think sometimes.
This episode is sponsored by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had maybe 6 or 7 subscriptions a month. I could not believe my eyes when it pulled up. I was paying for 18 subscriptions per month. Between streaming services, apps, and delivery services, it's never ending. I have a problem. But thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of all my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few taps. I like how the dashboard shows me the month's spending compared to the previous month's spending, so I can clearly see my habits. Plus, they'll help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Imagine that! Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/broskyreport. That's rocketmoney.com/broskyreport. rocketmoney.com/broskyreport.
Is machine better than man? Is machine programmed by the bloody and calloused hands of man doomed to out-human him?
Have we doomed ourselves to ruin ourselves? What's that called? It's a theory of, like, we're going to reach a peak of human innovation that we're, after that, we're going to spiral back into the Dark Ages. Do y'all know what I'm talking about? I'm just going to type it. Theory that... after the Renaissance comes the Dark Ages. What caused the Dark Ages? What caused the Dark Ages? Because we've lived through this before. The Dark Ages, also known as the Middle Ages, began around 476 AD, the fall of the Roman Empire. And 476 AD is considered to be the beginning of the Dark Ages. Now that is tea. Now that is tea. I remember this from fucking world history. I just blocked it out. The Roman Empire. Okay, some reasons for the fall of the Roman Empire. Guys, strap the fuck in. We are going on an intellectual cruise today. Sunday morning rain is falling. Okay, that's us today, but with the Roman Empire. Some reasons for the fall of the Roman Empire include, okay, they've listed 3 here. I'm sure there's more. Economic decay. The Roman Empire had been in economic decline since the 2nd century. The empire's economy was based on looting conquered territories. Hey, an infallible strategy. Once conquests ended, the flow of loot and slaves also ended, and deflation set in. This impoverished the empire, and eventually money disappeared from the Western Empire and was replaced by barter trade. Okay, step one. We're not doing slavery and building things and indentured servitude. We are doing bartering with chickens and goats. Okay. Infrastructure collapse. With no money, there was no funding to maintain roads, aqueducts, public services, and bureaucracy. Number three, barbarian invasions. With the Roman military gone, oh my God, I guess that is so true. I never thought about that. Because we went from, I guess this is like really actually basic history stuff that I've never sat down to be like, wow, I feel like the fucking original raptor meme, the like OG memes, pensive raptor or whatever that was called, philosoraptor. That's for real me. That's for real me. What if Pinocchio said that my nose will grow? Makes you think. Okay. Okay, so like I was saying, I never really sat down to think about now that it was an empire with an emperor. Once that dissolves, you leave those territories up to revert back to simple monarchies over their individual territories, which inevitably will create a war and will create. There is an innate human need for power. Okay? I don't know if this comes from being top of the food chain and having nothing to be subordinate to. I don't know if this comes from maybe we are inherently spiritual beings that we crave something to worship. We crave something or someone to give us a purpose because it is so abstract and open-ended. I understand how people can become involved with cults, okay? If you are a lost soul and you are craving meaning and purpose and direction in life, completely understand. I think it, I find it very interesting from a humanistic point of view to be like, yeah, 100%. People will always be warring to be in control. But it is an insatiable appetite for power. Nothing will ever be enough. To be the sovereign will never be enough. Okay, moving on. Damn, I'm tweaking right now. I've got my spit glands are like overly working. Okay. With the Roman military gone, Europe became vulnerable to attacks from barbarian tribes. These tribes, such as the Visigoths, okay, these tribes such as the Goth girlfriends. Okay, Europe was attacked by gamer Goth girlfriends, Vandals, and Huns, British Huns. You rot, Hun. I follow this Instagram account. Oh my God! Fucking swallow your spit! I follow this Instagram account. Oh my God! I follow this Instagram account called For the Love of Huns. Love of Huns. It's got 763,000 followers. And it's just British women. I love this fucking account. Can you pull up most popular posts? No, I guess not.
Telling you how to make it right.
Make tea and coffee?
By tin coffee's everything.
It is?
It means a lot to people.
It does?
Yeah, it's like a hearty gesture. Can I make you a tea? It's like saying, can I give you a grand?
Okay.
Telling you how to make.
I love this account. Go follow it. Okay. So anyway, what were we talking about? We were talking about, they were being invaded by, Europe became vulnerable to attack from the gamer Goth girlfriends, the Vandals, and the British Huns, regularly raided cities and towns in Europe. Right. Other factors that may have contributed to the Dark Ages include the quality of buildings deteriorated, trade goods went back to more basic models, less coin distribution, and farm animals became smaller. Okay, and they stopped GMO production. Okay, and the Roman GMOs were not GMOing anymore. However, some argue that the Dark Ages never truly happened. They say that labeling this period of history as a time of little cultural advancement is a sweeping generalization and regularly considered to be incorrect. I disagree with that. Going back to fucking feudalism after an empire is, I would say, well, maybe I don't agree. To be determined. Oh my God, I did not even know this either. I always thought the Roman Empire ended with the death of Julius Caesar. In 395 CE, which CE means common era, right? If we're not doing a BC, before Christ, after death, CE meaning common era or current era, is it is a year notation for the Gregorian calendar and its predecessor, the Julian calendar. CE is equivalent to AD, which is Latin for which is Latin for Anno Domini, or in the year of the Lord. I actually did think that meant after death. Wait! The church taught me that. Did I just fucking make that up? Did I make that up? Do Christians call AD after death? Oh my God, yes! AD or Anno Domini is Latin for the year of the Lord. If anyone tells you it means after death, they are wrong. Hey, if BC means before Christ and AD means after death, it would mean after Christ's death, right? Tradition has it that Christ lived for 33 years. Oh my God, I never even thought about that. So what about that 33-year period? Between, oh my God! So if we're talking about like 1 BC, that means 1 year before Christ was born. If we're talking about 1 AD, that means 34 years after Christ was born. Oh my fucking God. So wait, how are we actually, okay, if it's not, but still, it is based around the supposed existence of Christ, right? Does CE account for Christ? The existence of Christ. The short answer is that BC and BCE, before Common Era, both refer to years before the birth of Jesus Christ. So it is Christ-centric. Holy shit! And AD and CE both refer to years after the birth of Jesus Christ. What about those 33 years? Does CE mean Christ existed? Oh, we're getting to the bottom of this today. CE stands for Common Era, or rarely Christian Era. No, it doesn't. The word common simply means that it's based on the most frequently used calendar system, the Gregorian calendar. And who was Gregory, do you think? What the fuck is the Gregorian calendar? And who introduced it? Monks, I'm assuming. Oh, not too far off. The Gregorian calendar was instituted by Pope Gregory the 13th in 1582. Oh my God, y'all, we are learning so much today. The Gregorian calendar is a solar calendar based on the Earth's movement around the sun and includes leap years, which fuck a leap year. The Gregorian calendar is similar to the Julian calendar, which was introduced by Julius Caesar in 46 BC. However, the Gregorian calendar defines an average year as 365 days, while the Julian calendar, don't care. Don't care. This is what happens when you let men who think that they're gods determine how we literally tell time. Oh, wow.
Does the pride of man knoweth no bounds?
To be like, you know what?
Oh my God!
To be like, actually, I'm going to change how all of humanity and human history tells time. Because I'm the Pope? Because I think that God has blessed me as a vessel of his word? Are we smoking fucking crack? Oh, wow. You guys aren't thinking about this shit the way I'm thinking about this shit, dude. You guys are not critically thinking about this shit. I need everyone to wake up. Pope Gregory the 13th.
Burn him!
And they were burning women? Because they could read? This man just told us. Okay, the way you've been telling time? Just kidding. Because that's not how I want to tell time. Oh my God. What is the period between BC and AD called? What? There is no period between BC and AD. AD 1 is immediately preceded by 1 BC with nothing in between them. That doesn't make any fucking sense if Jesus lived for 33 years. What? Were they just fucking off? Or are we actually talking about... Okay, let me correct myself. We're talking about before Christ was born and after Christ was born. It's fucking me, the AD after death thing, that it doesn't mean after death, that there's no 33 years to account for. Like, he died in 33 AD. What year did Jesus die? 33 AD. Wow, that was embarrassing. 14th and Nissan. Damn, they were doing a Nissan Ultima sale when Jesus was hanging up there. He missed the sale. Okay, back to the Dark Ages. 395 CE, after the death. Okay, so Common Era. So that means 395 years after Jesus was born. After the death of Emperor Theodosius. Have y'all ever heard of him? I did not know about Mr. Theodosius. I did not know about Mr. Teddy here. Emperor Teddy Roosevelt. The Roman Empire was divided in half. In 410, the Visigoths entered Rome and destroyed much of the city to the extent that it was never the same. Now, why would they do that? Why would they pillage? Y'all, seriously, if you're thinking about pillaging, just don't. Okay? It's selfish. It's selfish. I want to go to Rome and see the Roman ruins, and y'all put a fucking Starbucks attached to one of the Roman ruins? I'll kill you. That's real, by the way. Dark Ages. Dark Ages. Historiography. What is historiography? Y'all just making up shit now. Okay. Back to Blade Runner, dude. Yes, why does Roy save Harrison Ford at the end? And why does Deckard escape with the robot girl if she's going to die? That is what I wrote. Now, I understand why Deckard escaped with her, because they were, you know, the rest of the people who, the Blade Runners, that's the name of their little boy band, the people who hunt the replicants. I understand that there is now one missing replicant, which is his girlfriend, the girl, the woman. Her name's Rachel. She's missing. He's in love with her. So they're going to run away together. Okay. Still though, that does not, we're dealing with a classic Edward Cullen ex Bella Swan situation. She will die. That is a confirmed fact. Any scientific potential or opportunity to fix that was eradicated when they killed the guy who created the replicants. Okay. Cause Roy's vindictive ass came back to Earth and was like, I need to, punched his eyes in with his thumbs, killed him, snapped his neck, okay? Any chance they had at living happily ever after, extending the lifespan, which, you know, more tests to be conducted, classic Frankenstein and his monster sort of situation, that's done. We are now living on borrowed time because you know your girlfriend is going to die. What the fuck? Why would you do that? So now he's on the move. He's escaped with her. They're going north, I guess. They're leaving Ennis House. They're leaving the Frank Lloyd Wright house. That was crazy to me. I was like, I don't understand this relationship. Like, why does he like her so much? I understand maybe seeing way more humanity than, because she was a newer model of this replicant. Seeing more humanity reflected in her maybe than he sees in himself. Maybe it's one of those waxing poetic, whatever. When they sit down, oh, that's what I was going to do. There's this test they put him through called the Voight-Kampff test, which we're going to take it, to test if they're a replicant, if they're a robot, okay? And it's usually like 20 to 30 questions. They'll sit there and ask them, and usually they fail, or there's a certain tipping point bridge in the test where it's revealed that they are a replicant, not a human. Now, with her, it took over 100 questions for him to realize, yes, she's a replicant, okay? Maybe that's why he felt endeared. She was endearing to him. I don't fucking know. I also don't know the plot of Blade Runner 2049. Blade Runner 2049 plot. A young Blade Runner, Officer K, Ryan Gosling, who discovers a secret that could plunge society into chaos. He learns the truth of what happened to Rick Deckard. Ooh, after the first movie. Kay also finds that Deckard's offspring plays a key role in the narrative and that he is not human. Oh my God, he had bred with the robot. Yo. Okay, I need to watch it. I need to watch it. Okay.
What do you mean you've never seen Blade Runner?
What was I going to Google, dude? The Voight-Kampff test questions. Let's take it. Here we go. Voight-Kampff. Are you really human? Yeah, let's take this test. How many questions? There's 10 questions. Let's take it, guys. Someone gives you a calfskin wallet for your birthday. How do you react? These are real questions for the movie. I wouldn't accept it. I'd say thank you for the wallet. I would appreciate it. I'd say thank you for the wallet. Your little boy shows you his butterfly collection plus the killing jar. What do you say? I would say, oh! And then I would talk to his father behind closed doors about how we're going to give him up for adoption. That's nice, but why don't you keep the killing jar for yourself? Nothing. I take my boy to the doctor. Oh, lovely. I would say, oh, lovely, and then take him to the doctor. You're watching television. Suddenly you spot a wasp crawling on your arm. How do you react? I scream, then grab the closest object to me, which happens to be a can of sunscreen, and beat the hell out of it. Yep, that's my answer. I swat it away. I kill it. You're reading a magazine. You come across a full-page nude photo of a girl or guy. You show it to your husband or wife, who likes it so much, he or she hangs it on your bedroom wall. I'm killing him in the night. The girl slash guy is lying on a bearskin rug. I wouldn't allow that. I would take it down. Huh? I wouldn't allow that. While walking along in desert sand, you suddenly look down and see a tortoise crawling toward you. You reach down and flip it over onto its back. The tortoise lies there, its belly baking in the hot sun, beating its legs, trying to turn itself over, but it cannot do so without your help. You are not helping. Why? What do you mean I'm not helping? What is a tortoise? I don't know why I would flip the turtle over in the first place. Yeah, I don't know why I would flip it over in the first place. That's an evil thing to do. Describe in single words only the good things that come to mind about your mother. Cookies. My mother. I'll tell you about my mother. That's a quote from the movie. Music. Love. Summer. Sun. Books. Movies. Friends. Laughter. Yeah, I'll pick that one. You become pregnant by a man who runs off with your best friend. You decide to get an abortion. I would never have an abortion. What do you think I'd do with my boyfriend? Okay, I think there's a first time for everything. What? Runs off with your best friend. What do you think I do with my boyfriend? You decide to get... What? I think there's a first time... That's a stupid question. You're watching a stage play. A banquet is in progress. The guests are enjoying an appetizer of raw oysters. The entree consists of boiled dog stuffed with rice. Mm-mm. The raw oysters are less acceptable to you than a dish of boiled dog. The raw oysters are less acceptable to you than a dish of boiled dog. Not true. What do you consider to be the essence of humanity? The ability to experience and empathize with emotions? The pursuit of knowledge and self-awareness? Ooh, this is a great fucking question. What do you consider to be the essence of humanity? The essence. The ability to experience and empathize with emotions? The pursuit of knowledge and self-awareness? The absence of artificial components or programming? I guess the inverse of this question is, if you take this away, are you still human? So if you take away a human's ability to experience and empathize with emotions, are they still human? If you take away a human's ability to pursue knowledge and to be self-aware, no, because other creatures can be self-aware. If you give humans artificial components or programming, does that make them less human? I'm going to say, obviously, the answer is the ability to experience and empathize with emotions. In a world where memories can be implanted, how would you define your sense of identity? Oh my God. Oh my God. In a world where memories can be implanted, how would you define your sense of identity? It is shaped by our experiences, both genuine and manufactured. It is an amalgamation of personal growth and the impact of external influences. It is a product of pre-programmed information and lacks personal agency. Not true. How would you define your sense of identity? It's an amalgamation of personal growth and the impact of external influences, period. Let's see our results. Are you really human? Well, 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 it appears you are mostly human. You've sailed through the Voight-Kampff test with an intriguing set of answers, and your score implies you share the majority of responses with your fellow humans, period. You are, for the most part, resonating with the emotions, thoughts, and moral compasses that we typically associate with our species. Interesting, wouldn't you say? But there's a twist. A couple of your responses might have matched the AI, affectionately known as Cleverbot. Now, isn't that a fascinating observation? Our dear Cleverbot, which is with its rich programming, was built to mimic human responses. And in some ways, it seems like it has succeeded, with you unknowingly echoing its answers on a few questions. What? Now, don't you fret. This doesn't mean you're becoming more machine than man or woman.
I knew it.
Me getting a BBL and becoming more machine. It's simply a testament to how far our technology has advanced, where algorithms can imitate human interactions and responses so convincingly. While artificial intelligence is designed to simulate human thinking, there is a uniqueness, a certain je ne sais quoi, that distinguishes us, humans, from these sophisticated programs. It lies in our capacity for empathy and our potential for growth, and our inherent understanding of mortality, love, pain, joy, and sorrow. These are the characteristics that truly define our humanity. So even if you did align with Cleverbot on a few questions, take heart. It doesn't make you any less human. If anything, it serves to underline how well you fit into the complexities and contradictions that characterize our species. You're mostly human, with all the fascinating layers that entail, and that's something to embrace. It's our diversity and the unpredictable nature of our thoughts and actions that make us wonderfully, irrevocably human.
Fuck me. Damn.
Damn, y'all. I'm feeling real like, oh my God, Aristotle would have loved AI. Aristotle would have loved ChatGPT. He would have gone fucking nutso with that shit. Actually, who was Sophocles? The better question is, who was Sophocles? What was Sophocles known for? And I actually did type sop holes. Sop holes. What was sop holes known for? Sophocles was one of the three great Greek tragedians of his eight plays that remain today. His most famous is Oedipus the King, which is known for its impressive construction and use of dramatic devices, and also introducing to us the Oedipus complex, which is where you want to fuck your mom. The story was not invented by Sophocles. Fuck! The play's most powerful effects often depend on the fact that the audience already knows the story. Since the first performance of Oedipus Rex, the story has fascinated critics just as it fascinated Sophocles. What else was he known for? Not just the... He's the mom fucker guy. Oh, you're the guy who wanted to... Yeah, yeah. But he's him fucking his mom. Yeah. Crazy. The Greek philosophers and what they did. Socrates and Plato. Okay, yeah, I mean, we know these. Socrates developed the Socratic method, which involves asking a series of questions to expose flaws or contradictions in someone's basic idea. Plato believed that the world of ideas contained the perfect forms of every object on earth. Aristotle rejected Plato's theory of the forms in favor of a more empirical approach, believing that we gain knowledge from the evidence we observe in the world. Pythagoras, known for the Pythagorean theorem. Nerd! Epicurus said that the gods had no interest in humans and believed that people should enjoy their lives and be happy. Now, how did bro die? How did he die? I'm sure they fucking crucified him. How did he die? Kidney stone. Shit. They got my boy. He was pissing rocks. Damn, my boy was pissing rocks. He was like, what if we don't have to live for the gods? What if we live for our own self-fulfillment and self-actualization and enjoyment? Love, life. And he was pissing rocks. I know his ass was in pain. Epicurus died at the age of 71 from urinary calculus after having bravely suffered for a long time. Damn, I know that shit. Hurt! R.I.P. Okay. Socrates and Plato are two famous Greek philosophers whose ideas still impact society today. In ancient Greece, philosophers contemplated and theorized, yeah, this isn't helpful, about many different ideas such as human nature, ethics, and moral dilemmas. Yeah, bro. And then what? Come on, Google. It's too general. All right, we'll get into this next time. And I still didn't even fucking talk about Dune. What have I been yapping about for an hour? Okay, songs of the week. Arctic Monkeys, it's going to be that song, Star Treatment by the Arctic Monkeys. What do you mean you've never seen Blade Runner? There's another Arctic Monkeys song where he says,
dancing to electropop like a robot from 1984. Oh, from 1984. Montague's or Capulet.
What song is that?
I bet that you look good on the dance floor.
That song? I bet you look good on the dance floor. That's a great song. And then the second one is,
I said it's High Green, mate, via Hillsborough, please.
That song is called, fuck me.
Red light indicates doors are secured.
Red light.
Ask if we can have six in. If not, we'll have to have two.
Oh my God, I'm about to listen to this album all night. Whatever people say I am, that's what I'm not. Arctic Monkeys 2006. These 41 minutes and 9 seconds changed my life, dude. Fake Tales of San Francisco.
What up, Marty Bum? When you were argumentative and you got your face on.
Damn. That was when Alex Turner was a little twink. Now he's a twunk and fucking weird. Love him, though. Okay, guys, I think that'll do it for me this episode. I don't know what the fuck I talked about. Hope you learned something, though. Hope we discovered something together that there was not, in fact, a lost period of history 33 years in between 1 BC and 1 AD. Okay, it's actually just going to be 1 year, okay? Broski Nation, Broski Report merch is still live. Get it at broski.shop. Be on the lookout soon for new items, okay, coming this summer. Go ahead and watch Royal Court. That is my celebrity interview show with new episodes coming soon in May. We also do one video a week on YouTube. Stanley edits some and they're beautiful, okay? Check me out. Love you guys. Be safe. Make good choices. Go watch Blade Runner. Listen to that Arctic Monkeys album. Both of them. Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino and whatever you say I am, no, I am not. And if I eat it soap, no, I did not. Love you guys. Bye.